Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love to have you be a part of the program today. You can call 765-496-1999. You can email ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to ask you to start.
You're not even going to say hi, John.
No, I will.
Because I was going to do my Forrest Gump wave. I watched that over the weekend. That's awesome. The way that guy, he gets more velocity on that hand than anybody I've ever seen.
The wave works really well on the radio, by the way. I wanted to ask if you ever got around to sending Triple X root beer to the mayor of Lubbock, Texas, when Purdue got pretty well manhandled by Texas Tech in the Sweet 16 in the NCAA basketball tournament.
Well, I think you just ribbed me about not using the radio technology very well, so I'm coming back at you with not using Twitter technology very well. Yes, we did. We actually sent, did you see the video we made?
No.
We made a video at Triple X. You know, Greg and Carrie Ehrsman let us go ahead and use their store. And it was me basically, you know, consenting to the loss and, you know, getting the root beer ready to send over. And then Greg and Carrie actually went to Lubbock. They have a store in that vicinity, and they went to Lubbock and they hand delivered the case of root beer to Mayor Pope. And we were looking to get some kind of video to sort of put with the one that I did. That was on this thing called Twitter. Again, Stan, it's kind of...
If you've ever looked at my Twitter account, see just how often
I use it. Yeah, well, good. I mean, that's a good sign. But anyway, so what was the word that you missed on Jeopardy?
I don't remember.
Let me finish up. Yeah, so they got it. We went ahead and gave it to them. And it might have been documented, but it was just a lot of fun. It was a pretty cool thing to do. And Mayor Pope was very gracious. He actually tweeted that he had accepted and everything, so it was pretty neat.
Allow me to be a pedantic journalist for a second and ask whether the city paid for the product or whether it was donated.
I think Greg and Carrie donated it. I'd have to check with my assistant on that. But I didn't walk in there with $10 and buy it, but I think they went ahead and donated. It was just kind of a fun thing. And Greg and Carrie, I mean, they're really good, you know, community representatives, and so I felt very comfortable with them hand carrying it and saying the good words for us in Lubbock.
While we're on the subject of businesses along State Street, it's become official now what had been rumored for quite a while, that a derelict property at the top of Chauncey Hill along State Street is going to get yet another apartment/retail space. Apparently, mm-hmm. That's everything that gets built there apartment and retail.
That's kind of like college development 101, I guess.
And this time it's going to have a what's become referred to as an urban Target, mm-hmm. In the basement floor of that. How long was that actually in discussion? When did you hear for the first time that might be a possibility?
Well, probably at the beginning stages of State Street. And the reason why I say that is A, because it's true, and 7, because that helps me grease this up so I can give you a fuller explanation and take up a lot of time so you don't ask me uncomfortable questions. It's kind of like the mayoral strategy behind these radio shows.
That's why we interrupt you from time to time.
Well, I know. But anyway, when we were looking at the development of State Street, we felt that it was imperative that we get some type of national brand there. And the reason for that is because we're talking about this big project that's going to kind of change the look of not just the university, but of West Lafayette. And as we've said on the show a bunch of times before, that's our downtown. And a downtown has that wonderful blend of mom and pop shops, of small local businesses, and then a real good national anchor to sort of bring everybody there. And Target has always had Target, and I'm going to get it mixed up. It's all their Walgreens or CVS, one of those two, or maybe even both. They have these really cool urban stores in the major metropolitan areas like in Chicago and New York and Indianapolis and things like that. And we thought, what a great thing for this project. What a great way to sort of celebrate the density, the fact that, you know, we have a very, very strong population base down there. They generally are walking from point A to point B. And with the design of State Street and what we're trying to encourage with dedicated crossings and the other things, it would be just so awesome to have that presence there. Now, fast forward about 5 or 6 years, when the owner of that property right there at the corner of Northwestern and State made the decision to pursue a nationally known brand, we were really excited because you've been around here a long time and I've been around here for what seems like ever. That has always been an eyesore. You know, regardless of which direction you're going, whether if you're going east or west, that particular corner was always just a problem. And we'd gone through all kinds of different things trying to make it, you know, as they say, purdy it up. And it just doesn't work. I mean, you can paint, you know, the windows, you can bar them up, you can do all kinds of things, and it just didn't help. So when we realized we had this potential of a major developer coming in there, it was really exciting. That's when the conversation about, okay, we got a who, but then what is the what going to be? And when we saw what was happening further to the north with our fresh market going away, when we saw what was going on with Marsh closing down, we saw that there was still a vacancy at the intersection of 52 and Salisbury. We realized that there was sort of an underserved portion of our community on the south end of town in the near campus area. So that's when we thought that a Target store would be appropriate for that spot.
Explain to me how that works for a second. How did you determine that an intersection on the north end of your city where that Marsh store is, and I want to ask you about that in a second too, mm-hmm. How did you determine that a vacancy up there meant that you needed to do more investment a mile and a half south?
Well, the reason for that is, it's going to sound kind of weird, but it's true. A lot of folks, when they see things go away, that's when they start expressing a need for more of those things. I don't know if it's human nature. I don't know if it's just us West Lafayettians that do it. But when we had the Walgreens go on one side of the street, we had a CVS go on the other side of the street, we had the one CVS go away and just remain as a blank reminder of what could have been, that's when people start having that conversation. And that's when they start talking about the city as a whole. And plus, when we were talking about what was going on, and I'm using the great big air quotes here, which I don't like doing, but in our new downtown, it was felt that that would be something that would provide the necessities for a kid that's going to school here. And so it wasn't necessarily that people were knocking down my door saying, hey, you need to put a store down on campus right now. It's more or less, you know, when you look at the entire landscape, because West Lafayette geographically isn't that big, you know. We're not the sprawling city.
It's very compact.
Exactly. So when somebody talks about something on the south end, unlike, you know, in Indianapolis or even in Lafayette, you're not talking about miles away. You're talking just a few blocks or maybe a mile. So the conversation basically led to what could be the best fit for something in our new downtown area. And that's when that drugstore concept, Councillor Peter Bunder, he does such a great job of describing it, someplace where they can buy shoelaces and fruit. And
so
Target usually fits that mold.
That area along State Street has been the source of a lot of investment that's been announced over the last year or so. And primarily, there's been about three or four investors who are doing the lion's share of that. You and I talked some months ago mm-hmm. about the State Street cartel idea. These few people who have been
that's
doing
scary.
This.
That's
and
scary,
it's
Steve.
Well, and it's and honestly, I want to ask you if it's gotten a little scarier because you've had more and more investment from the same people over and over. Isn't there some risk that these people at some point in the future are going to have the city over a barrel because you have given over to them all of this? There's not a lot of diversity in who's investing and who's making these big investments, mm-hmm. perhaps more to the point, along mm-hmm. State Street. And so with those investments, with all of the dollars that are going in there from these three or four corporations primarily, there's a lot of bargaining power that comes with that, especially if there's any way that those people can, within the limits of the law, cooperate rather than collude. Mm-hmm. Don't you worry a little bit about giving over this investment increasingly to just these few corporations? Don't you need more diversity of investors so that you're dealing with people who will actually not just collaborate with each other, but will compete with one another to do that standard competition thing of build mm-hmm. a better product for mm-hmm. a lower price for those people who are actually consuming the products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do. But it doesn't really frighten me that much because the market here is so unique. You're dealing with a student-based population who they have a very active and very mobile allegiance to a particular trend. And so when developers come into town, you know, these guys, they look at our playing field, they look at it as a level playing field, and they look at it as a unique market because of that uniqueness that basically resides and spends money here. And so to say that one group or a very small number of groups could get together and decide the future of our community would be difficult, because I don't think that anybody with any accuracy could predict the buying and selling trends of the folks that come to work, live, and play here.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't know that they have. I don't know that they have to predict anything. Mm-hmm. All they have to do, it would seem, would be respond to conditions on the ground. So because mm-hmm. I believe you're correct. I believe that the mm-hmm. trends and the proclivities of the student body are going to change over time. Mm-hmm. But if you've got just a couple, three corporations, it's much easier for them to work together mm-hmm. in their own interest mm-hmm. to preserve this big investment that they've made, mm-hmm. which isn't necessarily in the students' or the city's interest.
Well, yes. But again, like what we're talking about right now, a lot of the folks that are building the products here, let's just talk about the residential component. That sociological trend is driving a lot of what they're building in these things. You know, you look at the micro rooms, you look at the just the way that the rooms are designed, and they are relatively similar. I mean, a lot of the products that are coming in are following that same plan, and it's predicated on what kids want nowadays. And I think we've had this conversation before, back when you were in college, and then way back when I was in college. And back in my day, you wanted to do your time in your dorm and then go off somewhere where you could have a more independent lifestyle. And that basically ran true probably to when you were in school. And it's somewhat true today, but we're noticing now, and the guys that are much more informed about this than I am, they have read the tea leaves, and the product that they want now is smaller, more technologically, advanced, and then closer to each other, on top of each other, and then having an area, a downtown area, where they can walk in. And that was one of the main design components of the State Street project. So I can't imagine that this would become something that would drive our local economy any more than putting something that is very popular in that location to begin with. And I know that's the hard thing to figure out. Because the next conversation will be, probably not in my career time, but what's the relevance of retail? Do we need to have a standalone retail representation on anything? Every day, somebody else is going online to purchase things like groceries, to purchase those basic major, needs of daily life. And it's turning, some of the things that we used to call meeting places. You used to have meeting places. You'd talk to people in the grocery store. It used to be the old cliche about, why I'd go to grocery shopping at night, because people would want to talk to me all night long in the grocery store. But those days are falling away because people can now do that online.
Let me ask, do you know if this Target location is going to have a grocery store component to it? Because that's one thing currently lacking in that area.
Yeah, we, Peter and I actually talked about that this morning in our monthly meeting. And the intent is to eventually do that. They're going to have, and I'm going to get these numbers wrong, but I think around 11,000 square foot of space. Some of that space is not going to be immediately utilized, and I think that with some strong suggestions from city government here, can get that addressed.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999 or email them to ask@wbaa.org. Let me go back north for a second and ask you about that former Marsh supermarket, which closed like a lot of other Indiana Marsh stores did mm-hmm. last summer. I have people ask me on a regular rotating basis, what's going to happen with that? And I've told several of them lately, well, I'll ask the mayor. And so now's your chance to tell us what the latest is on that.
They ask me too. And we've had this kind of conversation before, and it's always embarrassing to say, but the property is targeted for a unique yet popular development that we will be able to announce very soon.
What's very soon?
Probably by the next time we do this show.
Okay.
And the cool thing about that is that the space will soon be getting some architectural changes to it, which I think will satisfy that particular area of the city. And then the element that'll be going in, I think, will be equally as popular.
So do you have a signed agreement of some sort?
No, no signed agreements yet, but we're in the negotiation process to make sure that what goes in there is going to be, A, it's going to work. Obviously, you want that to happen.
You sound fairly confident it'll happen.
Dude, that's my job. I'm a mayor. I got to sound confident about everything.
Okay.
Even when you're yelling at me.
You have reason to be confident about this?
I feel confident that, yes, there will be some really neat announcements coming from that parking lot in the city here very soon.
Let's go to a couple of listener questions that have come in. A caller called in wanting to take you to task a little bit about the new islands that were built in the middle of State Street. They say it makes it a very tight turn onto those side streets. And in some cases, I have actually seen people kind of misuse them, wind up in the bike lane that's on the right-hand side as you're heading up State Street Hill.
Any
plans to put signage or to expand those turn areas, anything like that?
No, I mean, the design itself is a standardized product now that's used not just in college communities but throughout the country. But where we fell short, I believe, and I'm not a traffic engineer, but I think is just in the signage because it's a brand new concept. You know, the dedicated bike lanes, because they look like a road, they kind of are separated like a road, and sometimes they're really close to a turn in a road, can be somewhat deceptive. Just the other day, I was heading up State Street, and I'm heading west, and I look to my north, and I see a great big red Chevy in the bike lane. I mean, both sides of the bike lane just hanging there. And you know, it was somebody that just misread things and they were kind of stuck and they didn't know what to do. But yeah, I mean, we met with the Bike Ped group, and this has been about a month or two ago. And they opened our eyes up to some of the challenges that folks that are riding bicycles, specifically eastbound, down the hill could encounter. A lot of it has to do with the fact that there's just no extreme identifiers for the bike lanes. And so we're looking to get some green paint and to do some stuff, not necessarily paint the entire things green, but to go ahead and do some labeling both on the asphalt itself, and then have some more signs put up so that people will be much more informed about what's going on up there.
And that's something that you'll see in other parts of Greater Lafayette as well. I can think of a few intersections in Lafayette particularly.
Yeah, the one at 9th and Union.
It's exactly the one I was thinking of.
And we're on target, buddy.
So let's go to another listener question. Chad writes, the other day on Ask the Mayor, thanks for listening, Chad, there was a discussion about traffic lights, and the mayor said he was welcome to get feedback on how to improve traffic lights. This, I believe, was last month's conversation with Mayor Rozworski, because I'd asked him about how...
So Tony ratted me out and said, call John.
No. I think this is a question from Chad generally to both you and Mayor Rozworski. Mm-hmm. He says, can you please provide a contact phone or email or website for Lafayette and West Lafayette where feedback can be given? For example, if a traffic light is too long or a no turn on red sign is no longer needed or the light is not working properly, etc. So assume someone in West Lafayette wants to contact you with such information. What is the best way, do you think, for them to do such a thing?
Depending upon the time of day, usually that first best stop would be the police department, because they're the ones that are sort of the hub of getting that type of active, ongoing, on-time, real-time traffic information, specifically if it's something like a traffic signal or something like that. The other thing is to contact our engineer's office. We have been, as we've been going through the State Street process, we've been made aware of a lot of little things like the bike path, stuff like that, you know, because we're getting old now, we don't necessarily have the up-to-date information on how to make sure the labeling is appropriate. We think that just by having the bicycles there that people would figure it out, but it needs to be a little bit more dynamic than that.
And the timing of the lights on State Street, which
correct.
I'm contractually obligated to mention to you Ask the Mayor until it works.
Until the mayor tells you, Stan, we're rocking it.
When will that be?
Soon.
Seems like the answer I get every month.
And it is, but guess what? It's sooner now than it was last month.
Allegedly.
We're actually putting in our ATMS, Automated Traffic Maintenance System. And that thing, I mean, again, we had the conduit laid, we got all the fiber being laid, and so now we got to get the actual stuff, the boxes and stuff that do the regulation for us. We are working west with it. We had our staff meeting on Monday, and I spoke to our city engineer about it, and it's in progress. So stand by. It'll be ready. And then I talked about the one of our listeners last week or month had a question about the scramble, where we had that scramble. Yep. And I brought that point up at staff meeting as well and said, okay, here's the deal. Picture this, if you will. It's 2:00 in the morning. You know, there's nothing out but, you know, birds that are sleeping and, you know, night owls and stuff. And all of a sudden, a car is at an intersection and sitting there for 5 minutes because the scramble sequence is on. How does that not happen? Well, the explanation is almost as ridiculous as the scenario. The scramble is actually not a sequence of the lighting system. The scramble is actually a request. So there is a button somebody has to hit in order for the scramble sequence to actually be part of the lighting process or the sequencing process. So it shouldn't happen at night unless you got somebody that's just being goofy and running around slapping those little buttons. But during the day, yeah, that's when they become a little bit more invasive. And the understanding that I have from our engineers is that there is, in other words, if it sequences and there's somebody that didn't make the sequence and they just walk up there, there is a period of time before you can hit it again and it'll start sequencing. So they are kind of regulated, but we're still doing some research to see how we can better get the other lights more synchronized so that scramble won't be nearly as invasive. And then hopefully things will get a little bit more smooth.
Remember, you can send questions for any of our four mayors to our email address, ask@wbaa.org. You can also call in for just a couple minutes more to 496-1999. The race for Tippecanoe County Sheriff seems like it's gotten kind of mean as we've gotten close to primary election day. You've worked with two of those three candidates, and so you're interesting.
I've actually worked with all three. I think Woody was, when I was on, I think he was on, but I think he might have been on different shifts, but I'm familiar with it.
Primarily, I mean, you've worked a lot with Jason Domkowski and Barry Richard over the years.
And they both worked for me.
And so one allegation that's been made recently that I wanted to have your input on was that Jason Domkowski, your current police chief, has, in the words of some, bullied other people out of running for sheriff. And there is little question in knowing Jason that he's an ambitious, driven guy who wants to do things. Have you asked him at all about these bullying concerns that have come up?
I haven't talked to Jason very much about this at all. You know, the odd thing about a political campaign is that the history of a person generally becomes second or third on the priority list. And we forget, and this is just talking about Jason, and it's something we all know about him. When I was elected back in 07, taking office in 08, one of the reasons why I actually got elected was because the police department was in pretty sad shape. And Jason did a great job of getting that department to where it is today. It used to be an embarrassment for the city. Now it's actually recognized across the state as being one of the better agencies. So he's good at what he does, and he's passionate about what he does. And you are right. He is not somebody that backs down from, you know, a debate. And that's just the nature of his personality. But I think, and I don't want to give away things, but, you know, we have had conversations before about the political dynamic as it is nowadays, how things have sort of changed over the past year or two when it comes to how people run campaigns.
Let me ask you about that for a second, because you'll be the fourth or fifth or sixth Republican I've asked about this, and I'm curious if your answer is going to be similar
But who's your favorite Republican?
I'm curious if your answer is going to be similar to the other answers, which is, I've heard from a number of GOP leaders over the last 6 months or so who say they feel like this election cycle, particularly this year, 2018, has changed a number of the candidates in these races, whether it's talking to people I know who know the Senate candidates or people on the local level who know. I mean, because the prosecutor's race and the sheriff's race have gotten pretty mean, to be quite frank about it.
I go back to when I ran against Jan Mills. It was very civil. I mean, it was just basically a resume comparison. And we had some debates. It was Q&A. It was actually boring, you know, comparatively speaking to how things are nowadays. Nowadays, it's like children in a playground. I mean, there are no rules whatsoever. I don't think it's nearly as bad locally because these guys all got to live with each other, win or lose. But on a national level, it is absolutely embarrassing. It seems as though it's not a matter of what your agenda is or what your history in public service has been or how you plan to lead your country, your organization, your district. It's more about what's wrong with that guy. You know, what's wrong with that guy? How dare he challenge me at this event, this debate, on this podium? He's unqualified. And not only that, he's a really lousy person that probably isn't nice to kiddies and et cetera, et cetera. And that seems to be the headlines, too. And You know, is it a result of because who's in the White House now and how he got that seat? Or does it go back even further to reality TV? I don't know, but it seems like across the board, we have lost a sense of decency in this country.
Let me ask you about, because we're running a little low on time. I want to ask you about one of the things that was brought up about Chief Domkowski was that he'd been, and the County Election Commission is going to look into whether he's been making campaign-related phone calls on a city-issued cellular telephone. He says he's been paying the city back for use of that phone. So let me start with that. Is that the case?
He did write a check to the clerk's office, yeah.
And so now let me go to the next question, which is, isn't it possible that's still in violation of at least the spirit or the letter of the law? Because it's long been known, and we saw this with Tony Bennett when he was the state superintendent, of using, in that case, computers with databases. And this is an allegation that's brought up with Todd Rokita as well from his time as Secretary of State, using the property of a municipal or state agency for one person's political campaign. Even if he's paying you back for it, isn't that something he's not supposed to be doing by the strict reading of the law?
One thing I know about Jason, and I've known him since even before I had this job, he's a stand-up guy. And if there's something that he needs to do, he'll do it. I respect what he has done as a chief. Being a chief as well, I know that it's not been an easy task. If something's gone down that Jason shouldn't have done, you need to get him on this radio show and ask him about it. I stay pretty clear of his campaign.
Yes, but we should point out here, you were one of the very first people to endorse that campaign.
And I'll endorse him even to this day. He's a good chief and he'd make a great sheriff.
So what I'm asking you is, isn't there a difference between, if he's done something wrong, trying to make it right, which would be seemingly why you would pay back the city, because you perhaps realize that you're not in the spirit of the law, but isn't that still not quite the way it should have gone down?
That is one of those questions that I can't give you an answer to. I don't know what the wrong was. I don't know particularly what he's done. I know that he did write a check, because you could take it either way. If he wrote a check to the city and he wrote it for all of his phone bills for the past X number of years, is that wrong? Is that right? Does that mean he's done something for an X? I don't know. But my only thing is that when we're talking about qualifications, I know that Jason's the leader of the pack, particularly in this race.
What do you tell people who are city employees, particularly in the current political climate, about running for office? I mean, how do you advise them?
Usually it's, what are you thinking? It's really people that don't, not many people that work for me have ever expressed an interest in running for office. Usually it's people that have a particular issue with what's going on, not just locally, but nationally. Oftentimes I've had people come into my office that are interested in running for Congress. And usually it's just a conversation that starts with, what's your motivation? And
have those conversations changed over the last few years?
Most certainly they have. I mean, twofold, actually, because I know more now because I spend a lot of time dealing with these folks. And second off, because of how, you know, nasty these races have turned. And when somebody expresses an interest in running for office, they obviously are really good at getting their resume out. And then I say, okay, your resume sounds great, but how's your tolerance?
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always. The half hour has flown by, and we'll pick up the conversation next month after all these elections have taken place.
You got her, Stan.
And remember to tune in next week at this time for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Send questions at any time for any of our four mayors to ask@WBAA.org. You can also tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter, and you can find these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.